Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will be finding common ground and taking it to the next level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. This show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. It's my hope that you will come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. This is a no-holds-barred show. My guests will have differing spiritual belief systems, and some will have no spiritual beliefs. You may or you may not agree with things that are said. What I'd ask you to do is keep an open mind. This way, you can see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now, today, my guest is Dr. Rizzi Tamane. He's a commissioned minister and spiritual counselor with Rizzi Tamane Ministries, a Jesus-based ministry that values people of all faiths and religious backgrounds, and he's been doing that for the past 5 years. He routinely provides affirming spiritual support to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, and is much sought after as a public speaker on the subject of intersection of religion, spirituality, and LGBT civil rights. Dr. Tamane is an inspirational gospel singer whose albums are Come Out and Just the Way You Are. He is the author of Inspiration for When, a spiritual book with scriptural encouragement for daily situations. His latest book is An Unspoken Compromise, a spiritual guide for LGBT people of faith. Last but not least, he wrote and directed What's Wrong with This Picture, a comedic movie that portrays problems inherent in literal Bible interpretation and in the church's continuous persecution of the LGBT community. And we'll find out more about him in just a minute. I'd like to welcome Rizzi. How are you today?
I'm doing very good, David. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for agreeing to be on the show. And I have a lot of ground to cover with you, so I'm going to get right into it, if that's all right with you.
Oh, yes. Thank
now,
you.
Now, sure. Just so the listeners know, Dr. Tamane, Rizzi, is very open about his life experience, and he has written a book called An Unspoken Compromise, which is about his journey in transitioning from being a female girl to becoming a male. So when did you first realize you were different than other girls, Rizzi?
Yes, it really started maybe when I was in between 6 to 7 years old. I started to feel more like the little boys in the neighborhood and less like the girl that I was growing up to be. And by the time I was 8 years old was the first time I verbalized it to my family. I remember going to my dad and saying, "Daddy, I think I'm a boy." So that was my first time of, you know, really verbalizing that something was wrong in my gender expression, how I felt. Even though being so young, it was difficult to know that that meant I was transgender. So that was why I used those words with him, "Daddy, I'm a boy." And initially he did laugh, and he told me that most kids at that age, you know, have some kind of, gender confusion or gender role confusion, and that it could just be a phase that would phase out as I grew older. But of course it didn't, which is why we're here today, David.
Ultimately, what was his reaction, Rizzi?
Ultimately, the longer time passed and this phase was not, turning out to actually be a phase. It was more permanent situation, his humor quickly left the scene, and he became gravely concerned, and my mom became gravely concerned, and they set out from that point on to save me from going down the wrong path in life, as they deemed it to be. So that began a series of exorcisms in my life, because my parents were fundamentalist Christians. So I would, you know, have many exorcisms. But the first one was when I was about 12 or 13, and my mom brought the church elders to the house, and they had me kneel down in the middle of them, and they splashed me with what was holy water and holy oil, and they beat me with some palm tree branches and were just shouting for the demons of homosexuality to come out of me, because even though I came out at 8 saying I think I'm a boy, I was still physically a girl. I was attracted to women and eventually identified as a lesbian. So they were praying for the demons of homosexuality to come out of me, and it was a very traumatic situation, but sadly it continued to deteriorate, and that was not my only exorcism from that point on.
Oh my. Well, what were your early religious and spiritual experiences like for you?
Well,
before the religious abuse started.
Before all this abuse started, I always was told that God was love. My parents, you know, have always been deeply Christians, evangelicals, I would say, and they, you know, raised me in a Christian home, and up until coming out, you know, to them and the issues with my sexuality and gender nonconformity, I was told God was love and God loved everyone and, you know, to love your neighbor as yourself and all these great teachings that they, you know, implanted into me as a child growing up in that home. But all that love went away. And it's something that we find for LGBT people. You know, God is love except when you're lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. Judge not except when the person is LGBT. So it was really, you know, contradictory for me, having grown up learning that God is love and, you know, love everyone, and it's good to have a spirituality and to love God. And then once I was not conforming to what they believed I should be, suddenly it turned into the abuse. It turned into God loves everyone except you because God hates gay people. So it was very traumatic and very confusing. And it had a long-term effect on me, David, because I internalized that. You know, once you start believing that even God hates you, that can be very damaging to you spiritually, especially if you want to know God, and suddenly this God that you want to know hates you, is what you're being told by your parents, by your friends, in the schools, in the church, by the pastors. It really had a bad effect on me, and like many LGBT people, I believe it led to my low self-esteem, which led to my eventual drug and alcohol abuse and failed suicide attempt eventually.
Well, what were the faith challenges for you at the time when you started to get the message that you were no longer loved because you were identified as gay at the time? What did that do to you?
Yeah, it really, you know, broke me down. It broke down my spirit. It led me to feel very isolated and, you know, very alone in the world. It made me feel like something was indeed wrong with me, you know, because everyone said so, from the pastors to the parents to even people who are trying to be your friends, you know, would say, well, I sympathize with you, but you do know this is a sin. You can change. You can choose to change. So there was that internal struggle. And many times I prayed that I would change. You know, sometimes I would pray that I would change to a heterosexual. And when the gender dysphoria hit, I would pray that God would change me into a boy because I felt like a boy. And I just had a lot of confusion all around. Very confusing, very isolating experience.
I can only imagine. Well, how did that affect your faith in God at the time?
Well, you know, I mean, there was a point in which I had that feeling of resentment. And this is part of what inspired me to, you know, found the ministry, because I can relate to LGBT people who grew up like me in Christian homes and decide that, you know, well, if God hates me, then I hate God. You know, why believe in a God that hates me? I kind of had that feeling like, okay, well, this is probably not, maybe there isn't a spiritual path for me. This is probably not something I should pursue anymore. But for some reason, deep down in my heart, when those feelings and negative thoughts and resentment would creep up, something in me, something deep down in my spirit would say, no, you know, something is wrong with the message you're receiving, but it is not God.
Mm.
Something always kept me, you know, on my feet about that and just would not let me turn away. And, you know, being the person that I am and on my spiritual path that I follow, I believe it was the Holy Spirit, which, you know, Jesus taught us that the Holy Spirit would remain in the world to encourage and teach us and help us. I believe it was some yearning and some teaching from the Holy Spirit that continued to say, hold on, the messengers are flawed, not the message. The messengers hate you, not God. So the representatives of God are hateful and are abusing you, but God does love you. Dig deeper, dig deeper. That's how I felt. And I started to dig deeper. I started to read the Bible. I started to read it for myself, because like many people who claim that they are fundamentalists, they haven't even read the Bible at all. These are just, you know, things that are passed on. You know, I heard it from the pastor. I heard it from my grandma. I heard it from the neighbor. But has anyone actually opened the Bible and read it? And many have not. So I was one of these people. And at that point, I thought, okay, I'm going to open this Bible and I'm going to read it for myself. So naturally, when I start seeing, you know, thou shalt not lie with a man as with a woman, like from the book of Leviticus, which sounds like it's clearly saying do not be homosexual, I said, well, let me read on. Let me not be a person who picks out one verse. Let me read the whole of Leviticus. And then I saw, you know, things like you should not eat shellfish because that is an abomination to God. And I'm thinking, well, you know, something is wrong with this, because a ton of Christians, including my mother, who was at that time, you know, subjecting me to what I call involuntary religious abuse because of her upbringing and her religious problems, you know. I read that and I thought, well, my mom eats shrimps. My mom eats lobster. My mom eats and loves crab. And yet she persecuted me with this verse. So something is wrong with people who are choosing to do this way, in my opinion. And certainly I don't have to subscribe to the same brand of Christianity or, you know, reading the Bible in the way that they do. If they choose to do that, eat shrimp and then tell your gay child they're going to hell, you know, on a verse down, and that's okay to you, I don't have to subscribe to that, because that doesn't make sense to me. I learned then to, you know, start to look at things in their historical and cultural settings and not drag them into the present century. Exactly, David, yeah.
Good for you. I think that it takes a lot of insight to be able to look at things and put them in their proper perspective, and that many people do not choose to do that. And also, Leviticus is in the Old Testament, and the New Testament seems to have some very different messages, and certainly Jesus only spoke of love. There was no judgment. There was no condemnation. And, you know, it's a whole different story. And it's interesting. I had a guest on by the name of John McNeil, who spoke of a story where a Roman centurion came to Jesus about a man that John McNeil believed to be his partner. And Jesus very openly went to the man and seemed to accept their relationship. Now, I'm not familiar with that story or where that comes from, but it was something new that I'd learned, even though I have read through the Bible. I'm curious, when did you start digging, Rizzi?
Oh, yes. I mean, I believe this started right after that horrible exorcism, the first horrible exorcism. So right after my 12th or 13th year, after that, I was very traumatized, and I thought, okay, I have to, this just cannot be the right representation of God, you know, where LGBT people are perceived as being demon-possessed. You know, I knew I wasn't demon-possessed. Mm-hmm. And I knew right then, then and there, that something was horribly wrong. And in fact, the story, going back to what you said about your guest, Mr. McNeil, I am very familiar with that story. And yes, depending on the translation in the original Greek and Latin text, yes, that servant of the centurion soldier could rightly, and I believe very rightly, be translated as his lover, his gay lover, and Jesus did commend him. In fact, what Jesus said in front of all the scribes and Pharisees who were, you know, the religious people of the time, the pastors and preachers, today we would call them the pastors and the preachers, you know. Yes, right in front of them, he said of the man, no greater faith have I seen than that was demonstrated by this man in all of Israel. So even amongst you who feel that you are teachers and religious leaders, no one had demonstrated such great faith than this man who is in a same-sex relationship, because the man approached Jesus with an open heart and just said, you know, Jesus, will you heal my servant, you know, which doulos, when interpreted correctly, would be lover, would you heal him? And Jesus said, yes, you know, I will come with you and heal him. And he said, you don't have to get up and go anywhere. I know who you are, and I've heard of your miracles. So I know if you give the command right now from where you're sitting, my lover will be healed. And that was how Jesus said, wow, you know, no greater faith have I seen than someone believing I can do this sitting down right here. And it's a story that should be told more and more in the face of today's evangelical opposition to LGBT people. You know, Jesus did not condemn that relationship at all. In fact, he praised it.
What book in the Bible does that appear in, Rizzi?
I believe it's in the book of Romans. I don't have it right in front of me, but I believe so. It's definitely.
I think that's
in
what
New
John
Testament.
McNeil said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to have to do some digging for that, because I would like to find that. In fact, I'll call John McNeil and ask him. Now, you talked about gender dysphoria earlier, and I'm sure most people have no idea what that is. Would you please explain it?
Yes, gender dysphoria is a state of being in which your outward biological gender does not correspond or is in conflict with the gender that you feel you are in mentally. And mentally in your mind. So your mind feels like it is one gender, for instance, female, while your body biologically and all of your sexual organs are male. And one of the ways that it was really explained to me when I went into therapy for the purpose of transitioning from female to male, there are guidelines, you know, by the Transgender World Association on certain things you should do before you embark on, you know, transitioning medically, and one of those is to see a therapist or two. So the best way it was explained to me by my therapist was that this state of gender dysphoria actually develops very early on in the womb, before you even come out of your mother's womb, whereby hormonally, you know, the sex hormones go there, and, you know, for instance, as a female that was born female, my mother's estrogen went into me, and it caused the development of the female breasts and the female organs. But my father's testosterone was overbearing to my brain and told me I was a boy. And so you would come out born with the male brain and the female body. But really, you know, already you've been born into this this state of gender dysphoria, and it will, you know, eventually start to come out as that body is developing into the female and that male is growing into the male. So it's really a quite, you know, it's an impactful and very uncomfortable state of being.
Well, I have a former partner who had that situation, did not transition, was a man, but always felt that he was a girl and a female. And he has had his hormones tested, and they're mostly female hormones.
Oh.
And for his own particular reasons, he's chosen not to transition. And he does not like to wear a label, but he does identify as female. So I have had some experience with somebody with a similar situation. Now, you turned to addiction and suffered from mental illness as a result of your torment. Can you tell us how you found recovery from the addiction and the depression?
Yes, yes. I mean, I did. I sunk into a very low state of self-esteem and clinical depression, which led to a suicide attempt. I did abuse alcohol for many years and drugs to fill in that void of you know, my parents' rejection. And it was a very trying time in my life. But at just rock bottom, I just hit rock bottom, and I thought to myself, you know, I'm either going to, you know, overcome this addiction or possibly just die of an overdose of cocaine and alcohol. And, you know, this is not the way to go. This is not what I want from my life. And I resorted really to prayer first. I prayed really hard. I remember telling God, you know, that's it. Enough is enough. I can't go on like this anymore. I need your help to give me the strength to get clean, to get sober, and to, you know, just learn how to love myself and learn how to accept that you do love me. Because even if my parents will not, if I feel a closeness to my God, I believe that that will fill in that void that was going on in my life. So it started with prayer. And then, you know, just going to programs and trying to stay clean. And it's been now almost, I believe, eight years of being completely sober. So I'm really proud
Wonderful.
Of that. I feel really blessed to be here. Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't want to have you break anonymity if that is the situation.
Wonderful.
Let you
Wonderful.
Hide around. Yeah, it's been a journey. And I have no problem breaking my own anonymity because I think that, you know, there's a little bit of, well, what should you say? What should I say? There's a part of the 12-step program that talks about attraction rather than promotion. But the 12-step itself says that having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, you tried to carry this message. So I carry the message oftentimes in my radio show and let people know that there is recovery out there, because a lot of people, especially with regards to sexual addiction, have no idea that there is recovery out there, and it's a totally different situation from putting down alcohol or drugs, which we don't need. But, so when did you actually make your sexual transition, and what were the emotional challenges like for you, Rizzy?
Well, could you please repeat that, David? The sound went out for a second.
Yes, Sure. I wondered when you made your sexual transition and what the physical and emotional challenges were like for you.
Oh, yes. I began the physical transition just in January 2012. I started off with the top surgery, which is the bilateral mastectomy, to remove the female breasts and construct a more male appearing chest. And you know, it was a mixed experience emotionally. I was very happy. You know, my natural breasts had been a source of great dysphoria, you know, and usually for most female-to-male transgenders, that is the main cause of their, you know, the main bulk part of the dysphoria, because they're very visible and, you know, they're not easy to conceal. So when I had that done in January 2012, I was very, very happy. I was very elated. It was such a relief to look in the mirror and for the first time in my life to see a reflection that corresponded more with my mind, with my male mind, and now my body was changing to match that. So I was very relieved. But of course, it is surgery. There's general anesthesia, there's hospital stays, and that part of it, you know, was nerve-wracking. That was only the first of many surgeries, because I then, later on that year, began stage one of what would be a 7 or 8 stage bottom surgery to change the female genitals to male genitals. And so you can only imagine, you know, all those stages and all those hospital stays and all that anesthesia. It's been a very long journey. Sometimes the recovery is more painful than other times. But it's been helpful to have my partner, my wife, beside me, taking care of me. I feel very lucky about that, and I can only hope that everyone else going through this has someone to help them, because, you know, as you can imagine, it's very emotional and it's very physically taxing. But of course, it's worth it, and you know, I'm just glad I was even able to do it because of the freedom and the relief from that gender dysphoria that the transition has brought for me.
Well, I'm so happy for you. For mm-hmm. people that don't have partners, are there support systems out there, support groups? Where can people turn to for help?
Oh, yes. I should have mentioned that. Thanks for bringing that up, David, because for many people who are, you know, not partnered, there are support groups. There are several that I myself still joined and still participate in. You can find them in the Yahoo groups. There's the FTM Phalloplasty group. There's the FTM Info group. There's quite a lot. If people just Google Yahoo groups FTM, several of them will come on. And I myself am a member. And through those groups, a community of transgender people have become like family. You know, we have shared our journeys. We have shared resources on how we got hormones, you know, like the testosterone, who are the doctors that administer that, what kind of insurance, if any, can help you, where you can stay before and after surgery. We share pictures of our surgical results and, you know, stories of how the doctors treated us and how we're recovering every stage of the way, every step of the way, and, you know, what to expect with surgery. And there's even some transgender men who go to the hospitals. If they're local in that city where you're having your surgery, they will come and visit you in the hospital. They will offer you a room in their homes to stay. And so we've really banded together. I'm really proud to see such unity in the community.
That's wonderful. Well, for those of you who did not tune in at the beginning, Dr. Rizzi Xavier Tamain is a minister, an author, and he's also a composer-singer. And now, with his permission, we're going to play one of his songs. And so the first song that we are going to be playing is All Because of You.
together when you've just had a loss. Your heart breaks and then you need a hand.
Rizzy Tumaine, that song was All Because of You. Rizzy, what CD does that come from?
Oh, that comes from my new CD, which is due to be released shortly on the 1st of March, to be exact. And the CD is called Love is Stronger. That's one of the songs from the album, Love is Stronger.
And where will people be able to get the CD?
Oh, they'll be able to get it from my website, which is RizzyXavierTimaine.com. They can also get it from CDBaby.com by just entering my name, Rizzy Tumaine, or Rizzy Xavier Tumaine. And it will also be available on iTunes.
Name?
My name is...
Rizzy, would you spell your name for the audience?
Oh, yes. It's Rizzy, R-I-Z-I. Xavier, X-A-V-I-E-R, and Tumaine is T-I-M-A-N-E.com, RizzyXavierTumaine.com. And also it will be available by March 1st for download on iTunes, so you can get the entire album on iTunes or Amazon.com as an MP3 as well.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, thank you for that. Now, let's take a look at your books. Would you be willing to tell the listeners what your books are about?
Yes. The current book is An Unspoken Compromise. It's really my life story. It's a memoir of sorts. And I say a memoir of sorts because half of it is my personal story of how I came out, at 8 as a trans boy. In Nigeria, my parents' reaction, and how our relationship got into different states as we all try to deal with the situation, which is what the title of the book is. At one point, we got into an unspoken compromise, kind of a standoff position where we just wouldn't talk about it anymore. They were going to be themselves, which is evangelicals that believed I was sinning and going to hell. And I had overcome, all my addictions and settled into a place of believing, like many other people of faith, that there's nothing wrong with LGBT people and that God loves us just the way we are. So we got to this unspoken compromise state, which inspired the name of the book, whereby we had that standoff and just had to respect each other's views. I'm glad to report that we moved on from that stage of being after all these years of involuntary abuse. As of last year, my parents did apologize to me for all the years of abuse, and we were able to have a reconciliation, and they were able to accept me for who I am finally, which was just such a blessing. So I share that whole journey in this. I share that whole journey in this book, and to encourage other people, that there is hope and there can be reconciliation, and maybe in sharing my story, it will help someone else going through gender dysphoria. And the other half of this book is mostly just addressing the error in literal Bible interpretation, explaining why it doesn't work well, and just letting LGBT people know that if they want to know God, they shouldn't be discouraged by those Bible verses. And I try to explain them all. I actually do mention the centurion, the Roman centurion, very briefly in that part of the book as well.
Yes.
And that I think of it, it's not in the book of Romans. I must apologize. It's in the book of Luke and Matthew. So it's either Matthew 8 and then Luke chapter 7, I believe, where the story is shared with people. And it's something people should read just to see, you know, what happened and transpired between Jesus and that centurion. And also, you know, so that's the central message in this book. My other book was called Inspiration for When, and it was just a very short book that tried to provide, encouraging Bible verses. You know, the Bible has many things in there. Not all are good, but not all are, condemnation and hellfire and brimstone. And that book took all those inspiring and encouraging texts from the Bible that I could find for unique and different situations in people's lives. So I have inspiration for when you're angry, for instance, and I try to say, give you some of the Bible verses of what Jesus said to do when you're angry, to forgive someone 70 times 7, meaning just forgive a lot, turn the other cheek, don't be easily angered. And I try to just guide people like that. Inspiration for when you're mourning because you've lost someone in your family. And, just Bible verses that encourage you and, that they have gone to be with the Lord and God can strengthen you through those dark times. So those are the two books that I've done so far.
Mm-hmm. And where are the best places to get those?
The Inspiration for When book is offered as a gift, actually, along with my other CDs, which are Come Out and Just the Way You Are. Those are gift items for people who support our ministry, which is Raise It Amen Ministries. And you can get to it from my website, or you could go directly to RiziGospel.org. Rizzi is just R-I-Z-I and then Gospel, GOSPEL.org. That's a direct link to our nonprofit, and I believe any donations to support the vast work that we do will get you Inspiration for When, and the CDs Come Out and Just the Way You Are, as well as numerous other gift items. But everything that comes from those pieces of work donated directly to the ministry so that we can continue to do some of the things we offer to the community, such as Transgender Scholarship Fund. We've been lucky enough to help two female-to-male transgender people to transition. We've been able to pay fully for their surgeries.
Wow.
This past year. Yes, so it's awesome when people support us and help us do that. We've also been able to build wells in Cambodia, in the rural villages, to help them from the cholera epidemic. We've built a well in Nigeria. So we're being able to do a lot to help people through the ministry, which is RiziGospel.org. Mm-hmm. And then,
Let's talk a little bit about...
Oh, yes, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you to tell us a little bit more about the ministry, what it's about.
Oh, yes. This ministry, really, I founded it, I believe it was 2007, which, you know, this was after I had overcome my addictions and found a path of spirituality that you know, gave me hope and kept me close to God and allowed me to be myself while pursuing a spiritual path. And I wanted to share that with people of the LGBT community who, like me, grew up in these fundamentalist homes and either resented God or had turned to drugs and alcohol themselves or were somehow being persecuted. You'd be surprised how common it is. Once the ministry was established and we set up an internet presence and, you know, let the community know we were there, there were hundreds of emails and phone calls and letters coming in from people all over the world. We had people from Africa, Saudi Arabia, Pakistan, and then all over the United States and England, Jamaica, all these countries, writing in or calling in to say, you know, I'm being persecuted, I'm, you know, having an exorcism, or I've been kicked out of my home by my parents. And that was the beginning. I spent, you know, hours either talking to them or emailing them back and forth, explaining those Bible verses like Leviticus that we spoke about and why they shouldn't let it persecute them. Because, you know, nobody lived literally by that Bible. As I said, my mom, you know, would be a fundamentalist, but even she eats shrimp. Therefore, she is not actually, you know, completely a literalist, as they would have you believe. So I try to point out that nobody actually, you know, follows the Bible word for word, nor can anyone. It's humanly impossible and undesirable to do so. And it was first just counseling people, and then it expanded to, you know, having groups where we could meet and talk for those who are local and support each other and pray together. And then from there, you know, I started to see, you know, that it's not just us who are suffering, you know, but being a person who was born and raised in Africa and understanding poverty and disease and sickness, we started to expand to try to help our neighbors and truly do what Jesus asked us to do, to love our neighbors as ourselves, to help the least amongst us, which are the orphaned and the widowed and the poor. And so the ministry expanded to adding mission trips abroad. We went to an orphanage in Mexico in 2010 to give Christmas gifts. And we just continue to do those things up until, you know, at the present time when we started including the Transgender Scholarship Fund, because many insurance companies still fail to recognize gender dysphoria and will not cover those surgeries. So we saw that need and started to try our best to meet it as well. And really, this work we're doing is what I believe most, you know, Christians and religious people of all faiths should be involved in. I feel that if you truly follow the teachings of Jesus, all churches and all ministries should be more focused on world hunger and diseases and malaria prevention and the fight against AIDS and hunger and you know, poverty, and providing clean water and helping people, rather than, you know, millions of dollars, for instance, being spent by a church to fight gay marriage, which happened in California with the Proposition 8. You know, there was over $20 million, I believe, raised by the Mormon Church to fight equality. And that was very saddening to me, because I thought, you know, I can imagine half of the African continent being fed and being taught how to feed themselves and having access to clean water with that money. And instead it went to oppressing our neighbors, which was very, very sad indeed.
That is sad, and hopefully some people out there who may be considering using money for means other than what Rizzi has talked about will reconsider their position, because there are so many worthy causes and people in need in this world. Let's reach out to those in need and put down our prejudices and bickering and all of these things that cause division between people. Let's find common ground and follow Jesus' messages of love. Now, how did you find your calling to become a minister?
It really came out of necessity, I believe. You know, the more people were emailing and reaching out, you know, starting in 2007 when I founded the ministry, the more I felt called to, you know, step up into those shoes and pursue ordination and go to seminary so that there can be more voices, you know, that are clergy and are affirming, more clergy that are not, you know, telling you the Bible condemns you, but that have an open mind and open heart and are encouraging people to pursue spirituality without fear of condemnation. I was inspired to see that there were, you know, several other denominations that do that. You know, the Metropolitan Community Church is known to have many openly gay and lesbian and transgender clergy. And in fact, it was founded by Troy Perry, an openly gay man, I believe in the 60s or 70s. So, you know, they are there and they're around, but the evangelical voices, the homophobic voices, are so much, so many, yeah, there's so much more. There's so many more preachers using the pew to spew that hatred. So I just felt that, you know, one more person joining the Troy Perrys of the world would be helpful. And I feel very happy that
That's
I
wonderful.
Did that because I've been able to help people. Yes, thank you, David, yes.
Well, God bless you. What messages of hope can you impart to LGBT people who are struggling with the notion of judgment or for those who have lost their faith?
You know, honestly, I would say to LGBT people who, you know, have lost their faith or are feeling, you know, judged by God in some way, to please understand that this condemnation is not coming from a correct place. You can research it. You can research the Bible, and you should. You should research the Bible, and not only the Bible, even other faith traditions. I believe that looking deeper into any of these faith traditions will expose the same thing, which is that there is a flaw in literal interpretation. We can never take texts out of their original cultural and historical environment and just take them singly and, you know, condemn people with them. It's hypocritical and it's wrong. So, excuse me, I would invite people to really research for yourself. Don't just take the words that have been passed on by people who may be close to you. Really research for yourself. And believe me when I tell you, I went to seminary, I studied this Bible and religion, and I can tell you honestly from the bottom of my heart that God loves us just the way we are. We were created the way that we are, and God does not hate what he or she, depending how you want to refer to God, created. You can look at nature. In nature, there are gay animals. There's transgender hawkfish that routinely change from female to male and male to female. These were all created by God because we are all part of God's larger rainbow. You know, the rainbow doesn't have just one color. It has many colors. We're all part of God's design. So if you are somebody out there who has been discouraged, you've lost your faith, and you've walked away, please know that you can have a relationship with God. You can have a spiritual path for yourself. I summarized my spiritual path, which is open to anyone. An atheist can be a person that follows this path that I'm going to share with you, a Muslim, a Christian, a Buddhist, any kind of person of any kind of faith can follow this path. And that path is the Jesusian way, which I share in the book, An Unspoken Compromise. The Jesusian way only requires that you follow the teachings of Jesus. It doesn't even require that you believe Jesus was the Son of God through divination. You could believe Jesus was a great prophet or just a great teacher. But if you would follow those teachings to love God with all your heart, to love your neighbor as yourself, to not judge others, and to care about the suffering in the world and to reach out to other people, That's the basis of those teachings, and that can be a spiritual path for you. But if you want a more structured, kind of congregation feeling, as I mentioned before, there are metropolitan community churches, some United Churches of Christ that are openly affirming of all LGBT people, and you can actually find them at gaychurch.org. If you click on gaychurch.org, you can find a church in every state of the United States where they exist in different cities, and you can reach out and find the community. So please do not lose hope and do not leave faith. Thank you, David. Thank you.
Well, thank you. That's wonderful. How can LGBT people, or anybody for that matter, get in touch with their spirits?
You know, the spirit is it's in there. It's inside you. You know, I believe we all have a direct path to it. And all you need to do is just reflect. You know, take some time to reflect, to reach deep into yourself and reflect. You know, you are one with your spirit, and it's just a deeper level. It's beyond skin deep, and it's in there. But I think when we silence everything else, all the voices in our head and everything that's going on in the community around us or in our lives, be it school or work or family and other commitments, and just be still. Be still and listen, mm-hmm. and your spirit will speak to you. It's there. It's always there. And it's aching. You know, it's aching to come out and help you be a better version of yourself. It's aching to have a connection to the universe, you know, and to God or to God, you know, or to nature. It's aching because we are all part of one larger universe and one larger cosmos. And I think that's the thing. When we relate from spirit to spirit, none of all these other things matter. It doesn't matter if you're black or you're white or you're male or you're female or you're LGBT or heterosexual. Once we get to that spirit and shred everything off of ourselves, that's where humanity connects and connects very well. And that's what happened with my family. Often it takes you to be broken before you get to your spirit and realize, you know, and get in touch with it. But I'm hoping that listeners can do that without having to get broken. And what I mean is this. My parents had their dogmas and their situations and their religion and their church and all these things that led to this religious abuse. But it was last year when my father became just a person who was dying of cancer, of colon cancer. And I became just a person who was a child trying to help him, trying to help him get his medication, trying to help him recover after the surgery. And we sat there not as people with much in common, but as spirits now, humble spirits faced with a life-altering situation. That is the point at which humbleness takes over, and people can say, you know what, I've put this child through hell for being a lesbian and then a transgender person, but look at me now. I'm sitting here with no friends who I thought were my friends. I'm sitting here, you know, facing death. And at this point, I have to ask myself, God gave me this child. What have I done with the child that God gave me? You know, some people want children and they never can have biological children, or they are unable to adopt or whatever. But I have this child. And this child has flown miles from the USA to come here and take care of me in my weakest moment. And for that moment, he was able to see spirit to spirit. We're just people. When we bleed, we just bleed. It's all red. We bleed red. When we hurt, we all hurt. When we cry, it's the same tears. And so that's why it's important to get in touch with our spirits, and hopefully before a crisis forces us to have to do so.
Well, I think that's an important message. And to me, to be humble and to make oneself vulnerable, that's the point where we can really connect with somebody else. Mm. So that's some food for thought for people. Well, Rizzi, I would like to play another one of your songs. With your permission, I'd like to play The Way God Made Me.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Okay. And this is Rizzi Tamane singing The Way God Made Me.
Thank you.
you do, no matter what you say, together we shall ride. Freedom is on its way. You say your God is love, yet all you do is hate me. You say your God is love, yet all you do is hurt me. God says you're not to judge, yet all you do is judge me. Why do you hate me so? I'm just the way God made me.
That was Rizzi Tumaine, who has joined us today. And Rizzi, thank you so much. The hour went so quickly, and perhaps we'll have to have you back again some other time to explore some further ground. All right. Well, thank you, Rizzi, and God bless you with your ministry.
Oh, thank you very much, David. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing of separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who are having a spiritual experience. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize.
You have been listening to Different Strokes for Different Folks. To find common ground and take it to the next level, here on Blog Talk Radio with David Clark, every Friday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. You can listen to this broadcast again on srbroadcasting.com.